Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. Today's guest, a concert master, orchestra soloist, a classically trained violinist, proficient on violin and viola. But today's guest, Nikki, also fiddled around by taking a year off her healthcare professional life to practice the fiddle 8 to 10 hours per day. Her rewards were stunning, winning the California Senior Division State Championship in 2013 and 2016. And if that wasn't enough, currently holds the Nevada State Senior Division Championship for the past 3 years. Was it the Hansel and Gretel syndrome shared with her brother or her loving mother singing in the shower that nudged her towards a life putting families together through music? Or was it the biggest lesson learned in her life? Do not be like her music teacher. Please listen to this heartfelt story. Nikki Carlisle, welcome to today's show.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's a real pleasure. I've never had a fiddle player before.
Well, you do now.
Nikki, you made a significant transition in your life. Actually, you've made several major transitions, but one major transition was that you were a healthcare professional for 30 years.
Yes, yes, I loved it.
And all of a sudden, you started plucking fiddle strings. How did this transition all come about?
When I was working, I worked with developmentally delayed children and adults, and I learned so much from them. Patience, empathy, life lessons that, you know, you really couldn't learn someplace else. I had to learn to communicate with them, not having the ability to speak, mm-hmm. you know, and know what they needed. And, you know, in 30 years, I learned to do that. And
that was a heartfelt expression, a way of life in heeding to the care of these people.
Yes, but it was very, very rewarding. I loved it. I loved my clients, and I got so much from them, much more than they probably even got from me. But, you know.
I doubt that.
I just loved them. So, and I learned so much, like I said, especially teaching really young people, because kids can't tell you what's going on with them. They can't express this is bothering me. Even the teenagers I work with, they'll come in and we'll talk about a certain song that they're playing, and they just don't want to do that because something negative has happened mm-hmm. from someplace else. And I'll just go, okay, you know, this has happened with this song, huh? And they'll go, yeah. And I already know that. It's intuitive. Mm-hmm. And then I go, okay, let's try the next one, mm-hmm. you know, and go on from there, you know.
Do you see any correlation in working in healthcare and your music?
Yes.
And what would that be?
That would be the communication. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, even adults, can't really say what's going on. You have to figure that out mm-hmm. without the ability to, they can't express, okay, this isn't right. And also with the people that I worked with, everything had to be taught to them at a basic level. Mm-hmm. You couldn't teach two parts of the activity to them. You had to teach the first part, mm-hmm. add the second, and then the third, and build on the first one. If you tried to do that, your brain couldn't take in. And if you didn't start from that point, you couldn't get to a higher point. And that's the same as it is with music. I totally believe this is.
Obviously you do.
I do.
You come to life.
It's like, you know, a picking pattern on the guitar is down, up, down, up. You know, that's the basic picking pattern. But if you go in and try to do down, down, up, down, down, up, you've lost the chords. You can't keep the beat going, you know. And I believe the same thing in fiddling, you know, when I'm teaching my little people. And I talk about fiddling, but all of my kids, including guitar, mandolin, all of them.
You teach all these instruments?
Yes.
Oh, you do.
And ukulele.
How many students do you have?
I don't have all that many right now. I think there's about 10, 11.
I thought you were going to say 10 or 11,000 or
something. Oh, no. I was up to a 60 for a while. But, you know, I decided to get into doing, you know, I love teaching. Teaching is what motivates me in life, and I teach because I love it, not that I have to. So I work with wonderful students, wonderful parents, and it's such a joy to go to the California State Fiddle Contest, and my 11-year-old guitar student comes in first. You know, it's just like, wow.
How old were you when you first picked up an instrument?
I was 8, right after I broke my arm in 3 places. That also taught me. That taught me about the significance of learning one thing and then the other. And that was...
How would breaking your arm teach you something like
okay,
that?
Okay, so when I broke my arm, the next day started school and violin, and I desperately wanted violin, and I sat there, and everybody else in the class got their violins, and I didn't because I had a broken arm. And so I sat there for 3 or 4 months doing nothing but reading the music. I read all of the music. I learned all of the timing. I learned all of that. In 3 months, I could teach the class.
And you didn't play a note.
Didn't play a note.
What an interesting way to jump into this.
Yeah, it was, and I can look back now and see, you know, I had to learn one aspect of the music. I didn't learn to pick up that violin and play the violin as well as read the music. A lot of fiddle playing is based on, their teaching is based on listening to the music and playing. And I have played with such awesome musicians that do nothing but listen to the music and play. And I wish I could be like that.
Yeah, but Nikki, in reality, you are awesome.
Well, if that's all in context, you know.
Well, anyone that can be the number one fiddle player in your division in Nevada and California, it's got to be pretty darn awesome.
Well, I was talking to, on the way back from the state contest, I was talking to Kathy Kamschmidt, my twin fiddle partner. We are 3rd in the state for our twin fiddling. I'm really proud of that because we're against everybody. You know, in our divisions, we're against the people in our age group. You know, we're not against everybody, but in twin fiddling, you are. And what were we going after here? You're just...
We're talking about your awesomeness.
Oh, yeah, right. I think everybody is awesome in their own way, even the kids. And that's another thing that I live by is that I learn from everybody. But I was talking to Kathy in the truck on the way home, and, you know, some people are born with natural ability. She is. She's truly talented with natural ability. I can practice for hours and I get a little bit. Kids.
Well, I see that I opened with the fact that you practiced the fiddle 8 to 10 hours a day.
I was so
That's unimaginable.
Well, it was, but I was just newly retired. I'm going, I have some time. I'm going to catch up to everybody. So I did.
So did musical influence start from where? One of your parents?
No. No, it started from this man that came into our class when I was 8 years old, just before the broken arm, and gave us this test off of piano that we had to figure out what the notes were, if they were higher, lower, the same, whatever. And he told me I had perfect pitch, and now I
know. By perfect pitch, meaning your voice, or?
No, that my ear.
I can
hear.
I see.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
And I don't have that. My twin partner, Kathy, has it, but I don't. I have relative pitch. So if you're playing along on any instrument and the notes sound like they're all in tune, I can hear that. Mm-hmm. But then you get to an open string, and there's your tone quality. You get the open string. And it's gone. You know you're out of tune.
I jumping into this music venue at age 8, you must have had tremendous support from your parents.
My mom.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she took me everywhere. But, you know, that was another kind of sad thing because parents don't know what to look for when they want lessons for their kids. And kids are so influenced by teachers.
Well, but that's a good thing, right?
It is, yeah. Unless you have a bad one.
Which you apparently did.
Which I did. And my mom didn't know it, you know. So my advice to parents out there, know that teacher. Sit in on the lessons. Find out what kind of reinforcement they're giving those kids. What kind of positive are they giving them? Are they getting negative? If they are, get them out of there because they're so fragile, and mm-hmm. the only thing that these children have are their parents speaking mm-hmm. up for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
I presume that if I contacted you and said I have a child that wants to play whatever it is, viola, violin, or fiddle, guitar
mandolin, ukulele,
right?
Whatever.
Right. I presume that you go into a discerning process to try to determine how committed that parent or that child probably is in wanting to do this, isn't that
yes.
right?
Yes, and I also do a trial period of about 1 month, and you can pretty much tell what's going to happen in that 1 month. And I also parents have to kind of pass a criteria. In other words,
what kind of criteria would that be?
The kids are, they need to be taken to musical activities in the community, that the community gives these opportunities to the kids, so we take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And parents have to get them there, you know, and there's lots of these opportunities. And you know, I believe that kids have a life. You know, they want to do basketball. They want to do, you know,
sure.
you know, soccer and all these other right. things. Yes, and I get that. But there's lots of opportunities to do both, you know. And I keep in mind that these kids are kids.
So do some approaching parents, students, don't make the grade with you?
Some don't. But mm-hmm. I have probably a 90% success rate.
And how do you define success?
Kids that don't drop out.
Oh,
90%.
So how long do you have these students?
Up until they reach a certain level. My teaching is based on trying to teach them everything they need to become successful in whatever they want to do, in whatever direction they want. So I teach them how to write harmonies. Mm-hmm. Everybody reads music. How to play off of chords, how to read a guitar player's fingers, mm-hmm. how to improvise. All of this stuff that you don't get from classical.
You know, this is very unusual to me. I mean, I took piano lessons, and my teacher never talked about anything.
I have adults. I have adults that come in, and they'll sit in on my ukulele groups, and they'll go, no one's ever taught us this, you know. And I teach people how to read music and memorize it immediately.
I would just guess that the many of your students, the music becomes one of their focal points in their life, because you do such an extraordinary view, number one, start with, you know, of it's really a really broad based perspective that you hold out for these children.
It's the bigger picture.
That's what I mean.
Yes, it's not what's happening right now. It's where they want to go, where they need to go, you know, and how to get them there.
Right. Wow.
Yes, to be successful in anything they want to do.
That is.
And then one of my top priorities is getting families together to play.
We want to hear more about that. We're at break time, and listeners, we're not going to play our traditional theme music during our break, because we're going to have Nikki play some of her tunes for us during this break.
This is a tune called In Memory of Herbie McLeod. And my guitar player behind me is Al Myers, who is an amazing guitar player. And this song means a lot to me because my student gave it to me. And I played it when my dad passed away, who meant everything to me, my best friend. And I couldn't tell anybody, So I played this tune, and when I played it, I said, my dad just passed away, and I'm playing this for him. And it's called In Memory of Herbie McLeod.
If you are just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Nikki Carlisle, a championship fiddle player. Nikki, that was a very, that's really a beautiful song.
It is.
It almost brings tears to your eyes, doesn't it? It has that sort of tone.
Yes. It's a very haunting type quality to it. It's a beautiful song.
Uh-huh. And tell us more about what it takes to win a championship. I mean, my goodness sakes, being a number one in a couple of states for years, I mean, you're obviously proficient. And is there a marketplace for fiddlers to play around the world or things like that?
Yes. I think, yes, I have one student. He's an adult now, going to college, but he played for the Dalai Lama.
He did?
Yes, yes.
And what did he play?
He played a classical piece, and I'm trying to think of it, but I'm having a senior moment, which is also one of our bands. That was a great segue. I have another family that they've gone on to other teachers now, but they're the Aldrin family. They play all around Shasta County and everywhere. They're touring right now. I started all of them.
So they're actually professionals, would you say?
Yes, they're touring the country right now. That's the whole family, and there's seven kids and mom and dad, and I helped everybody, and I got all of the kids. Got mom on ukulele, helped dad with his viola, and
so you gave lessons for how many years?
To them?
Mm-hmm.
Probably about three, I'm thinking.
Well, that's not, I mean, that's a long time, but
it's not real long because they advance so quickly.
Uh-huh.
You know, and once they started advancing to the point where the mandolin player, who was about 10 at the time, 11, she started out playing me. I'm going, she's ready for another teacher, you know. And that's probably the criteria for moving on.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're probably going to have a difficult time finding one in this area. and you may have to go online to find one. And that's what happened. They went off to a fiddle camp. One of the mandolin teachers there saw her and said, I want her for a student. And she did online lessons.
And that works, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it does. Really, yeah. Yeah. Yep, yep.
Is
yep.
this something that you do or you'd consider?
I have done a little bit of it, but it's really time consuming. And mm-hmm. with 10 groups that I'm in right now.
you are in 10
yes.
individual different musical groups.
Groups, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And yeah, it's kind of overkill, isn't it?
And how often do you meet?
It depends. A lot of them don't meet all that often, like Stage 44 is one of them. And I do that group occasionally. Mm-hmm. That is a really amazing group out of Shingletown that puts on plays and does musicals. And mm-hmm. that's where I get involved. I'm the musical director for that. And they do summer programs teaching all kinds of life skills, mm-hmm. and they teach kids how to write plays and how to act them.
So there's enormous spinoffs.
Yes.
Right? Enormous spinoffs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It must be very gratifying to look back and see some of where your students are in their life. It has to be tremendously gratifying
yes.
for you.
One of them came up to me a while back and came over to the house. You know, he's in his 18, 20, mm-hmm. to give me a hug and tell me, I wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for you. And he was going on to college to become a music teacher.
Wow.
Yeah. Just going, yes.
Big time. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have a group of four girls, and most music teachers get one or two remarkable mm-hmm. students in their lifetime. They drop into my lap constantly, absolutely constantly.
Well, in reality, that has to be because of your reputation.
I have no idea.
It has to be.
I have no idea.
I mean, the way that you've explained to our listeners how you consider taking on a student is pretty profound, right? And you would never think a music teacher would really talk on such a broad basis, but obviously You see beyond the music.
Yes, yes.
Right,
I see the future.
Right. I guess
know?
that's
yes.
a good way to put it.
Yes.
You see the future for that child.
Yes,
that
and not necessarily in a direction that I would go. It's
right.
a direction that their talents take them.
Wow. What a perception to even diagnose that.
Yes, yes. And
maybe you brought the stethoscope from your medical days.
I don't know. But families – that's my priority. But these four girls, they call themselves the Shooting Stars, and they're two 11-year-olds and two 13-year-olds. And they're different abilities, but together they're amazing. You can't get kids that old to sing out in public. These girls have, my guitar player, Al, says they have voices like angels.
Oh, my goodness.
And
well,
people hear them, and they're just going, wow. You know, so at a young age, I discovered that they all could sing and put them together.
Whoa.
And they're now doing their own gigs.
Yeah, you're a mastermind. Do you sing?
A little.
You sing in a shower like your mother?
I do sing, but there are so many other people. Don Dickles in our Senior Moments band has the voice. We call him the voice, and he is amazing. You know, and when you're around people that are really amazing in what they do,
right?
You know, you're just, I'm okay.
You know, you had said that character, people with character get involved in music. And that's another interesting perspective. That may be true. I mean, you say that they're more outgoing. They're people person. They're soft skills. Seem like they have soft skills.
They are a lot of characters. But, you know.
Oh, did I miss that? They're all characters.
They are. But they're all. The circle that I am in, the players that I get to be around are a lot for the kids. And if you are around people, the kids are our future. They are our future. And if you're around people that promote the kids, they're good people to be around.
Don't you think that's one of the things that we as a society are missing?
You know, and the kind of music, a lot of the kind of music that we are doing is becoming lost.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Because our guitar players, all of us are getting older, and the music needs to be perpetuated.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And, you know, I tell the kids, if they're on a backup instrument, a mandolin, a guitar, you have to go in and be the backup person. You have to be able to do the chords behind this person. That's half of what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, flat picking isn't all of it. You know, you have to be able to get in there and do the backup. And you know, the music itself, the old-time fiddling, that's being lost. And these kids love to do it. You know, that, you know, I tell them, you have to learn all of this stuff.
Well, you have to be. I mean, you are an exceptional teacher. There's no question.
Well, my parents think so. Which I'm grateful for.
You've actually have changed the trend of music in North State for fiddlers.
Well,
I mean, share with us.
Well, one of my highest compliments was from Bernie over at the Music Connection, who said that I have had the biggest influence on the musical community in Shasta County. So I just went, wow, that was really sweet. Well, but yeah, and everybody that comes in goes, oh yeah, Nikki told me to do this. Nikki suggested this or whatever. And I'm just going, wow, that was really nice. Yeah.
What is the biggest gratification that you have, maybe specifically, you can point to?
You know, I think it's, you know, life is little things. You know, I had the story of I had several guitar and mandolin students, and they came into lesson one day, and I gave them all music, and they all had different music, but it was written out in three lines. The written music was on the top. The second line was a finger notation tablature for guitar. The third line was a finger tablature notation for mandolin, because they were guitar and mandolins. Mm-hmm. I went over the music really quickly with them. I sent them home, said, be able to play it next week when you came in. All of them could play the music. And then I said, what are the other two lines? They said, we don't know. So what happened there was they learned all of their music off of written music, not a number notation.
Oh, my goodness.
And I was just like, yes!
Wow. is there a Hall of Fame for fiddle teachers? Do you know? We should start one.
No. There are some amazing teachers out there. They really are.
Well, you are,
I'm just,
obviously,
I'm just
amazing.
One of them.
And you're an amazing teacher, and you're a very proficient.
Well, like I said, my parents love me, and the kids do too. That's my claim to fame, is all my kids love me.
We had mentioned at the opening of the show of the Hansel and Gretel syndrome, which is very, very interesting, because you know what? I've never heard of that before. And I presume, well, rather than presuming, I'm going to ask you to tell us how that figures into your life.
My mom, I was born in Maine, my brother and I, and we were 9 months apart. We were very, very close. And mom got sick, and we didn't know what was happening with her. And she,
you were about how old at that time?
5 and 6, I think we were. Mm-hmm. And she dropped out of our lives and said she would be back. And we didn't know what happened to her. And we only had each other. Our dad wasn't really in our lives. And
so if she dropped out of your life, who cared for you?
He had a girlfriend who took care of us for a while.
Your father had a girlfriend.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And but she still wasn't family, or, you know, she was just taking care of us. We only had each other, and we were inseparable.
You and your brother.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that changed later on when my my adoptive father came in our lives, and that was really hard because the first time I saw him, my mom goes, "This is your new dad." And my brother and I, who never, ever let go of each other's hands.
Literally.
Uh-huh. We were joined together, literally. Uh-huh. And we only had each other. And she said,
close relationship.
Yes. And she says, "This is your new father." So I wanted to go to him. He was on the other side of the room. My brother did not. So at 5 years old, I made up my mind. What was I going to do? Drop his hand and go, or stay with him? And I dropped his hand. And our lives changed at that point.
That was a defining point.
Yes. I was only five.
Yeah.
What a decision for a five-year-old to make.
Nikki, I want to talk more about that, but we do need to take another break. And can you pick up your fiddle and play us at all another song? Or however.
Yes, I can do that.
Okay. In the meantime, if you're listening to our show, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, supported radio. And I am Henry Cuenca. And we're dispensing with my traditional theme songs at break. And we're having Nikki play us a tune. Nikki, you're on.
Okay, this is Paca Bell's Canon. And this is the classical piece done Celtic style. This is probably my favorite song right now.
Oh, wonderful.
And everybody knows this is my favorite song. So what a treat getting to play it on radio.
I love it. We all love it. Oh, Nikki, that's absolutely beautiful.
Oh,
I love it.
At the Nevada State competition, I played that one, and we'd been in the car for 10 hours. It was a long day. I got on the stage, and I'm going, I was going to play something else, but it was a really long day, so I'm playing this one. This one's a lot easier for me to play.
Oh, my goodness.
And everybody in the competition went in that particular area of the competition, and that was the song that I played, and all of the players went in that, and I won.
Oh my goodness, I can see why.
It's a great song, and it's a cross between classical and Celtic.
Yeah, I picked that up.
Yes.
Kind of picked that up.
So right. Cool.
Yeah. Just for our listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 listener-supported radio, and you just heard Nikki Carlisle play her song, which won her state championship position, Division I. So, again, Nikki, we were talking, going back to I'm really interested more hearing about the Hansel and Gretel syndrome, only because I've never heard of it before. And I did a little poking around in Google, and there isn't too much that they say about that. But they do characterize it as similar to your situation.
Mm-hmm.
A difficult parent or absent of a parent.
Absence, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And adjoining closeness to somebody,
mm-hmm.
your brother.
Yeah.
Holding hands.
Mm-hmm.
And you're 5 years old, so you couldn't really remember a lot of the details about
No,
that.
I just remember mom leaving and not knowing why. And I didn't learn that till years later. Years later, I learned she had cancer. That's why she had to leave. But I didn't know that as a five-year-old.
And where did she leave to? The hospital?
Yes.
And to, this was in Maine, correct?
Yes. Yes, she went to the hospital.
And, yep. And your father's girlfriend oversaw the needs of you and your brother. Mm-hmm. And that lasted for how long?
I was five. I can't really remember.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't think so.
It was probably at least for a month or two.
And I guess eventually your mother did
yes,
pass
she
away.
Came. No. She came back and got us.
Oh.
And that's when we moved to Reno. She got a divorce in Reno. Uh-huh. At that time, that was a quick divorce. And then she met my dad. Uh-huh. I'm not sure they met in Reno. I can't remember that part. Mm-hmm. But and then she married my dad, my adoptive father, who is just a truly wonderful man.
You know, I want to. You had mentioned to me that very, very interesting. I felt very dramatic, interesting story about your father, or father, stepfather. I guess you call him your father, right?
My father, yeah.
Yeah, that he was in the military with the SS Jean Nicolette.
Yes, correct.
A ship that was shot down by the Japanese.
Japanese, yes.
And it had a crew of about 100.
I thought there were more than that. There weren't, huh?
But it was only 23 that survived.
Yes.
And mm-hmm. they were brutally, brutally treated by the Japanese.
Yes.
That picked them
yes.
up. They had machine guns on. Can you tell us a little bit about that? That's a fascinating story.
They were forced to go down a gauntlet, which is off the end of the pier into the ocean. The gauntlet is a row of soldiers on each side of the pier, and they send the men down, the prisoners, down through the middle of them, and they have bayonets and machetes and clubs and all this stuff, and they beat them all the way down to the end of the pier, and then they jump in. And they're, you know, and Dad somehow went over the side. He didn't get to the end, I don't think. And that's probably what saved him.
I think what I read was there was four of them
yes.
that jumped in on
yes.
the other side
yes.
into
yes.
shark-infested waters.
Yeah, well, the end of the pier was where most of the sharks were because everybody went off the end, you know, and they all died,
mm-hmm,
you
sure.
know. But the ones that went off the side... Yeah,
just brutality.
Yes,
ultimate.
Yes,
and
yes.
The captain of the ship, a Japanese, I don't know his title, but I read further that he was known for his absolute cruelty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when the war ended, they looked for him. They wanted to run him down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they could never find him.
Mm.
But they thought maybe the Japanese said that maybe he committed suicide.
Mm.
But they really don't know. But it was a horrible experience.
There was one thing that was truly remarkable out of that, too, was my mom met my dad 8 years after the war.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he went down on the Jean Nicolette. 8 years later, he meets my mom. I'm 5 years old. I wasn't even born then. He meets my mom, and my name is Nicolette.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh,
how
my
ironic,
goodness.
You know?
Oh, my goodness.
Like,
sakes.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know that for years.
So I presume that that you really had an affectionate life with your father then.
Dad and I, we spent the last 8 years together. And he was a truly wonderful, giving individual. You know, mm-hmm. he couldn't have been any more wonderful. And His whole goal in life was to make sure that everything was taken care of for me when he went, mm-hmm. you know, and he passed away last year, and it was devastating. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always hard, but, you know, because we had become, you know, the best of friends and inseparable, and we traveled together. He was immersed in all my music and mm-hmm. knew all my friends and said I was so lucky to have all of these wonderful people in my life. And he's right. I was, and mm-hmm. I still am. I've got so many wonderful, wonderful people in my life, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Did he ever talk about the incident? openly? Or
yes, he would occasionally, he would. But people wanted to do interviews on him all the time, and I'd ask him about that. They wanted to write stories about him and all of this, and he only wanted to talk about it when he wanted to talk about it.
I got you. Know? Well, that's fair.
Yes,
that's,
it was. Yeah, he'd talk with my daughter, just adored her, and he'd talk about it with her, you know. But sometimes he would with me, but it was mostly stories that were humorous, humorous things that had happened, like a boatload of chocolate that sat on the pier and nobody would empty it, so the birds and the bugs all got it.
Well, that's a great story yourself.
How sad.
You know, you say that you dropped the hands of your brother, and that was pretty much it. Now, but is your brother still living?
No.
He isn't.
No. He passed away in his mid-40s from severe cancer. It was throughout his whole body by the time they discovered. He was up in Oregon with my folks. He helped them out, doing stuff for them and worked up there. And they have a healthcare system that if you don't work full-time, you don't qualify you're out to lunch. And he worked three-quarter time and then overtime. They have people over a barrel. By the time they discovered what was wrong with him, it was too late.
Oh, my goodness sake.
Yep.
Now, did you maintain a relationship?
Oh, sure.
You did?
Yeah. But it was never as strong as it was when we were five.
Did you ever, as adults, talk about your relationship?
Tried, but he knew.
It just didn't work.
Didn't work.
Yeah. So tell us about, I know you have children.
Oh, yeah. Two great kids.
I know that you have two great kids.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Oh, just one final question on your brother. Did he ever pick up any music?
No. Well, he played trombone for a little while, but he gave it up.
Oh, so he wasn't like you, huh? No. So tell us about your children.
My son he works down in the Bay Area in Santa Rosa, and he would rather be a musician than, working full-time at his job.
So he did pick up on some of your influences.
Well, he and I did pit orchestras together.
What is that?
Pit orchestra is an orchestra that plays behind a play.
Oh, I see.
Yes, and we hired out to do that for about 15 years.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
I had a great story on that.
Tell us.
So, they're doing all these lines, on the play, and then we play at certain parts of the play, right? So we put a music stand flat in between us. We had a cribbage board, and we play cribbage. in between the lines, all time to play. And we played like 13 games. I won all of them. He picked the cards up, threw them across the stage, and went, "I'm never playing cards with you again."
Oh,
took him
goodness.
A year. Everybody was just laughing hysterically.
Well, of course.
So fun, but. Yeah,
what instrument did he play?
He went through every instrument when he was a kid. And he had an amazing teacher down in the Bay.
Yeah, his mom.
No, I didn't teach him.
Didn't?
No, I did not teach him because I wanted him to continue. And I saw what happened to a lot of kids with parents as teachers.
It gets into
a power struggle. I see that all the time. It's a power struggle between the kid and the adult. And I did not want that for my kids.
Foresight?
I was always doing that. So I got him this amazing teacher who introduced him to fiddle music. She was very progressive thinking as well as classical. And he went through every instrument, but he stayed with her. He's a really good mandolin player. He comes up here and does the contra dances with us. And he plays every genre of music. He can play anything, and we play twin. Play music together a lot. He's an amazing young man.
Well, that must have been very enriching to be with your son
playing
this pit music.
We did orchestras too. Uh-huh. If there was a mistake, we'd point to each other. We had so much fun. And he does country rock. and introduced me to that. And people are like looking at me going, you do that? And I'm going, well, yeah, I do it all.
Nikki, we're going to need to take another break. And I just want to ask you whether you want to play another tune during this break.
Okay.
I want to take advantage of this because I've never done this before.
I need to take this off, though, because I can't hear.
Sure, that's fine.
This is a swing tune called Sunrise on the Guinea Farm.
Again, that's Nikki Carlisle, our guest today on the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio. And, of course, I am Henry Cuenca. Nikki, you have all this to memory.
Yes, I wish I had more. And I wish I had the ability, like the others, to just hear it and play. Some of my kids, I say my kids, my students, can do this. Mm-hmm. But it's really difficult for me because I had that first start, you know,
sure.
8 years old, just learning the music.
It's amazing.
And pretty much now, if I look at a piece of music, I can read it and play it as fast as people that know it.
Lightning.
Yeah.
We had said during the opening that you didn't particularly like your music teacher.
No.
And that was something that there was a lesson that you learned there that you applied during your life. Tell us about that situation.
You know, I talk to the kids about this all the time because you meet people in your life that they have qualities that are not admirable. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And she was that way. She was a teacher that was there earning a living. She didn't like kids. She didn't particularly want to teach. She was bored, you know. And as a kid, you can tell all of this.
You can sense all that.
Yes.
Sure, I'm sure. Right.
And she was angry a lot of the time. And, you know, I learned at 8 years old, nine when I started taking lessons, I think, from her, that I was never, ever going to be like that. And that's why.
At the young age, you consciously made that observation.
Yeah. Well, it was about the same time I wanted to play a flute because everything else was too heavy, you know. But that's why I say it's so important for parents to be aware, know what your child is doing in a lesson, know what's going on.
I know that you had you had mentioned that you had a life-changing event with your eyesight, that there was a moment that you could see all
yes.
of a sudden.
Yeah.
And you were young, you couldn't you couldn't read books, you couldn't see. Tell us about that.
That's I was probably about six or seven, and we were living in San Francisco, and they thought that I had a learning disability because they put me in front of the chalkboard, and I still couldn't see it.
Really?
And if someone's face, and, you know, as a kid, kids just take everything for granted, but that's the way it is. That's the way
it
is.
You don't know. Yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
But if you put your hand like a foot away from my face, I couldn't see the ridges in my hand. I couldn't see someone's face. It was just like a blur. I could see that their face was there, you know. And then I got glasses, and it was like, oh, my goodness. I could see the cracks on the cement. I could see the little flowers. I could see – it was just – it was like, oh, my gosh, there's a world out there.
And you were – you just never
– I never knew all that existed. Nope.
Well, that was like –
it was mind-boggling.
It was like being blind, and all of a sudden you can see.
Yes, yes.
Exactly.
Yes, and then I got my glasses, and I could never, ever be without them. I was at my friend Karen's house up in Shingletown, and my cat would bring scorpions and drop them by my bed. He loved to bring me presents.
Scorpions?
Yes, scorpions.
And good thing they're not poisonous.
Oh, I think they would hurt anyway. So I had to have my glasses right next to me to put them on and look down first. Oh, and shake your shoes out. It's a must. But I could never be without my glasses until I got the laser surgery and the bionic eyes, I tell the kids, and it's amazing.
Well, that's amazing. Absolutely amazing. You would have thought that somehow somebody would have said, well, she can't see.
Picked it up, yeah. But they finally did when I was like right in front of the chalkboard and still couldn't see. And they finally went, this girl needs glasses. And
wow.
Yeah, yep.
What a deal. Mm-hmm. Now, I remember, and I hope you do too.
Okay. I hope so too. Makes two of us.
About Culligan water.
Oh gosh. Pivotal moments in life. I had just gotten married, and a young couple, and we were down in Santa Rosa, and I went in for an interview to the Culligan Water Company, and they need...
Are they still around? Culligan's still around? I remember their
ads. Yeah, they're still around.
Ads.
Yeah.
Hey, Culligan man.
Yes, yes. But it was a Culligan girl at that time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And there were 300 applicants, and they gave the job to me.
So what were they looking for?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, was this was your voice, or was it your physique?
I have no idea what the criteria was.
You just applied for a job.
Yes, but I was probably pretty outgoing even then.
Well, you
I
are
mean,
outgoing.
I wanted the job, you know. Well. So I went in there, and 300 applicants, they gave it to me. And the next day, we got we were told to buy the hospital that we went to work for, that they would hire my husband and I together and hire us on the same days off and the same shift. And I went, okay, I don't want the job. They were horrified. The Culligan people were horrified because this was a job on TV.
Oh, my God.
Yes, this was a TV job.
It
was a big
deal.
You know, and
so you didn't do it then?
No, but I wouldn't be here today if I had.
You could have been still on TV.
Well, not so much that. I wouldn't have gone into teaching. I wouldn't have learned all I needed to do for the kids and the adults and everybody I work with today. And, you know, I help out and bring music to their lives. And,
Did you ever receive a certificate or something that you were a Culligan girl or the
no
choice?
I never I
no
turned
picture,
them down
not, nothing that
I,
was it
I turned them down
oh
and then like I said they were horrified. They're going, you're turning this down. I'm going, sorry.
Why did you turn that down? How old were you?
19 maybe.
Okay, pretty young.
Yeah, but it meant my husband and I could work together. Same shifts, same days off.
Oh, I see.
You know, that meant
more
to me.
Yeah, love comes first.
Yeah, that meant more to me than being famous. Well, so, you know, enough people know me. I don't care.
There's another story that I want you to tell us about, and it's the squirrel story.
Oh, how I got here. Yeah. I was much younger.
we all were.
Yeah, we all were. And I was down at Santa Rosa. I was working healthcare. I had this great job and working with my clients. I love my job. But they had the huge fire doors. And you had to use a key, and you had to turn the knobs on these doors, and these doors weighed a ton. So my hands were getting ruined. You know, I after a shift, I could barely move my hands. And I realized at that point that I had to make a choice in my life. What did I want to do? Did I want to continue working and have a good retirement? Or did I want to give it all up and go live in the mountains and play music?
Mm-hmm.
So I chose the latter.
You chose music.
I chose music.
And you call that the squirrel story.
And so anyway, I didn't know that that's what I wanted to do. I was really lamenting over it. So I was driving early one morning for a special sale downtown, and I was driving through the middle of town, middle of Santa Rosa, in a housing district, and I saw this squirrel on the side of the sidewalk, and I'm going, he's going to run under my car. So I stopped, and six little squirrels came behind him.
Oh, my goodness.
And they circled my car.
Literally, huh?
Literally, circled my car. One bounced his head underneath. I wasn't moving, so it wasn't me. It was him. And then they turned completely around and all went off together. And I said, okay, to sign, I'm going to Shingletown. So that's what got me to Shingletown.
Boy, I like that. I've never had a squirrel story.
Yeah. And the house that I moved in shortly after, they had squirrels in the walls. And, you know, and that was bothersome because I was afraid that it would burn down. But they had a little ledge outside the window in the kitchen, and I'd sit in the living room. I'd be playing my violin, and the squirrels would have their little paws up on the window, the biggest one, and then the next in line, next in line, next in line. They'd be sitting there listening to me. I'm going.
Fascinating.
Yes, it was so incredibly cute.
I know that you want to give a lot of thanks to a lot of organizations that you work for. So why don't you go ahead and do that?
There are so many events for people in the community that the community does not know about. And I want to take this opportunity to let people know about it. The first one I have down here is our Contra Dance. And this is once a month. The next one is April 27th, Saturday. It starts at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. I have a couple of bands that play for that. And you go in and learn easy dance steps. And it's fast and furious Celtic music, and it's totally fun. The other next one is the Scottish Country Dance Group. They meet on Thursdays at 6:30 in Palisadro. At the community hall there in Palisadro. The next one is we have a Reading ukulele group that meets once a month at Fratelli's in Reading here. The next one is the Reading Community Choir. It meets at 7 o'clock on Tuesday evenings in Reading over on Placer Street. We have an acoustic jam at my place the first Monday of each month at 6 p.m. Stage 44 we talked about a little bit. District 6 is an organization that gives opportunities to kids. I've got just two more.
Go.
Dunsmuir Contest is June 8th in Dunsmuir, and the Western Open Contest is October 25th and 26th. If you want any information on any of these, give me a call. Leave me a message. I'll get back to you. My number is 530-474-4427.
Nikki, it's been a tremendous pleasure.
Well, thank
having
you so much.
You are such an upbeat individual.
Thank you. So are you.
Just love it and all the good works that you're doing. And you have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM radio. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. Or you can call us at 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or learn more about us. Thank you for listening to The Henry Cuenca Show on KKRN. Coming up next, stay tuned to Local Community Radio. We look forward to having you as our guest in a couple of weeks. Thank you very much.